Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we are discussing a sensitive issue that might be triggering. We will also be talking about details that are not appropriate for children. On April 22nd, 20-year-old soldier Vanessa Guillen disappeared from the Fort Hood military base in Texas. For more than 2 months, hundreds of people searched for her. In late June, her remains were finally found and identified 20 miles away in a remote area by a river. On July 2nd, prosecutors accused U.S. Army Specialist Aaron David Robinson of killing Vanessa Guillen and burying her remains. A few days before the charge was announced, Robinson fled the base and shot and killed himself. In the weeks leading up to the murder, Vanessa's family said she told them that Robinson was sexually harassing her, but she didn't file a report for fear of retaliation. Authorities have since charged Robinson's girlfriend, Cecily Aguilar, in connection to Vanessa's death and disappearance. Prosecutors said she confessed that she was involved in the disposal of Guillen's body. She faces 20 years in prison. She has pled not guilty. Vanessa Guillen's family spoke out for the first time on Friday, and here is their interview with ABC7.
Que con nada me devuelven a mi niña, con nada me devuelven a mi niña, porque mi niña es lo más precioso que puedo tener, mi niña.
Through the heartbreak, a grieving Gloria Guillen demanded justice for her daughter, Vanessa. She told me in Spanish, the Army lied to her.
Que son unos payasos de un circo.
She called Fort Hood leaders clowns in a circus, who didn't take her daughter's April 22nd disappearance seriously.
How's my family doing right now?
Well, pretty bad, pretty bad. Too much pain, everybody. Too much pain right here on the heart.
She was taken away from me the most horrible way, yet they take it if it was a joke. My sister's no joke. My sister's a human being just like me, her, all of us.
The Guillen family sat down with me yesterday for a socially distanced conversation. They say justice for Vanessa will only come if Congress launches an investigation into how the base handled Vanessa's case.
Speak about it, because we cannot let this happen again. We cannot just, oh, okay, the man killed himself, but my sister was taken away. It could have been your sister, your friend.
Have you been able to process what happened?
No. I still can't accept it, to be honest with you. It's been really, like, I'm dreaming and I just don't accept it. It's been really hard.
Y como dicen, es justicia por Vanessa. Apruebo eso. Justicia por Vanessa. Justicia.
That is Vanessa Guillen's family speaking with ABC7. Since Vanessa's murder made national news, current and former members of the U.S. military have been sharing detailed stories of sexual assault and rape on Twitter with the hashtag #IAmVanessaGuillen. A number of survivors are also speaking with a lot of media outlets across the country. A comprehensive bill by the same name, #IAmVanessaGuillen, will be introduced on August 1st. The family's attorney, Natalie Kawam, says it will require a third party to investigate sexual harassment complaints and allow members of the military to sue the government the same way civilians can. Vanessa Guillen's family is expected to travel to Washington, D.C. for the announcement on August 1st. Joining us more on this case is Jolene Amenderas. Jolene is a freelance journalist in San Antonio, Texas, and she has been covering Vanessa Guillen's story over the last couple of weeks for Texas Public Radio. Hi, Jolene. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you all for having me on to talk today.
Well, first off, can you tell us a little bit about Vanessa? She was so young, just 20 years old. Do you know why she decided to join the military?
Right. So I have not been able to interview her family yet, but in interviews that I've seen on other sites, I've heard that she just felt like a big sense of pride in wanting to join and serve her country, and that that's why she joined.
And do you know what she did in the U.S. military?
Right. So she was a specialist, and when she went missing, she was working actually in one of the arms rooms at Fort Hood. And that's actually, she went to another arms room to talk to Specialist Aaron David Robinson. That's the man Army officials are saying killed her with a hammer. And they say he actually did that in the arms room that he was working in.
You know, this is one of the parts of the story that really doesn't make much sense. I mean, again, we're going to be talking about some graphic detail just to let listeners know. Investigators say that Vanessa was bludgeoned to death with a hammer in an armory room. The family's lawyer, Natalie Cowan, says the murder happened at 11 a.m. The obvious question is, how could someone be bludgeoned in a room and then reportedly she was taken out with a box? How could that happen without anyone else witnessing it? The lawyer said that we're probably going to learn a lot more details as this trial begins.
Yeah, I imagine so. This is one of those cases where there are just so many more questions than we really have answers for right now. What I can tell you is that officials are saying that Specialist Guillen, she left the arms room where she was at to check some serial numbers on some equipment and some weapons, and that's how she ended up over there. And apparently there were no cameras in that immediate area. Days later, before they actually talked to apparently two witnesses who said that later that day they saw him moving a tough box, like a plastic container with wheels, and moving that into his vehicle. I think a lot of people have those questions wondering, you know, was anyone else working that day? Who was he accountable to that day? And we just really don't have the answers to those questions.
And also in a space that I'm sure people go in and out of, I'm assuming, in this room, how do you kill someone and clean it up and then put the body in a box? It just seems like there are a lot of questions that still need to be answered here.
No, absolutely. Well, and it's my understanding that armories are just so well sealed. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily that people go in and out of the actual armory. Of course, they go there to check out equipment and whatnot, but whoever's right. working there would be the one to go and retrieve the equipment and come bring it to them, is I think how that works. Those are all the questions that a lot of people want to know. The Army has had a few press conferences in the past few weeks, or one big one, and then one on the phone, where they took some questions, but they really were not able to provide any details except to say that it's a current investigation, it's an ongoing investigation. They've said that they're continuing to ask anyone with information to come forward with information if they have it. I know they said that they interviewed over, and this was earlier this month, that they'd interviewed over 300 people and put in over 10,000 investigative hours into this case. But again, we just don't have all of those details.
Right. So the murder happened on April 22nd. According to authorities. Let's talk about what happened before that. Vanessa's sister, Lupe Guillen, told NPR that Vanessa was sexually harassed by at least two men at Fort Hood, but she didn't report it for fear of retaliation. Vanessa first told her best friend Jocelyn about one incident with Aaron David Robinson, the man who reportedly killed her. What else do we know about what happened?
Right. So we know that she, through her family, that she'd reported that this sexual harassment. What we know is that the Army has come out and they said time and again that they have found no proof that this kind of sexual harassment was happening. I know they came out recently and said that there may have been some evidence that she was being harassed, but not sexually and not by Aaron David Robinson, they say. So there's a lot of, back and forth. You know, obviously, when the family says yes, that she mentioned her name, that she mentioned his name as the one sexually harassing her, we need to take that. I think a lot of people are taking that seriously. And that's actually what has launched sort of these national protests and rallies and vigils in Vanessa Guillen's name. Because apparently this idea that people are too scared to report sexual harassment or sexual assault or even rape, the fact that they're scared of retaliation from either their commanders or other people that they work with, it turns out a lot of people are saying that that's the culture in the military. And, as it was mentioned, the I Am Vanessa Guillen hashtag is going around social media. Just last weekend, I went to a convoy where hundreds and hundreds of cars and vehicles were lined up, and people had written anecdotes on their vehicle windows that said that just detailed sexual harassment and assault and rape that they'd experienced in the military. It was really shocking and a real showing that says what it's like to be a woman in the military.
Right. In fact, our next guest, Colonel Don Christensen, who served in the U.S. Air Force for 23 years, says over 60% of people who report see adverse consequences, and many times they're kicked out of the military for stepping forward.
Right. So what happens to people, really, there's just such a range, and the way things are investigated differs from branch to branch in the military. I've heard of people who have been sexually assaulted or sexually harassed who are moved out of their units, and I've also heard about, I talked to one Marine who said she was raped by several other Marines, and the person who attacked her was a year in jail or 18 months in jail. And so it really depends on what happens. I mean, whether people are getting kicked out because they're sexually harassed, I hadn't had anyone tell me that particular story, but what we can be sure of is that people really don't have a confidence overall, according to the people that I've talked to, they don't have a confidence overall that the military is going to really investigate these kinds of claims seriously and that they'll get justice.
Here's another story related to what you were just saying from Twitter. In 1995, I was drugged, raped, and sodomized at NNPTC in Orlando. When I went to report it, I was told I would be dishonorably discharged for filing a false report, and I would be charged with adultery because my rapist was married. I mean, Jolene, the stories are just horrendous, and there's so many, and they are so detailed.
They are incredibly horrific. Right now, we're working on a follow-up story where we talk to a lot of these women, so I've talked to a lot of them already. They're so detailed, and they're the way that they're said again and again and again. I mean, in some cases, the women, and men are sexually harassed and assaulted and raped in the military as well, but women are actually the large majority who really experience those kinds of things. And, some people report it. I spoke to one woman, though, who said she mentioned it to some friends. She said, this happened to me, and the friends that she'd known for almost a decade in the military just didn't believe her. And so she didn't even report it because she thought, well, if the people who know me best and who are my friends and who I work with every single day don't believe me, how would my commanding officer believe me? And, that's something that people So it varies from person to person what happened.
Going back to the case, Vanessa Guillen was murdered on April 22nd, and her body and her remains were not found until July 2nd. They were found just 20 miles from the base. Why did it take so long to find her body?
Well, I think her remains were found on June 30th, is my understanding.
On July 2nd, prosecutors accused Aaron Davidson of killing her, but her remains were found in late June. So about 2 months.
Right. But yes, it was a long time. And so according to the court documents that have been made public now, investigators say that they did interview Robinson. They did interview a lot of people about what happened to Vanessa Guillen. And it seems like when they were investigating Robinson, he said some things about how he and his girlfriend, Cecily Aguilar, had spent the evening together, drove out, looked at the stars. But according to phone records, officials are saying that those phone records really did them in because there's a record of Robinson calling Aguilar several times throughout the evening and them having conversations that last more than a minute. And it raises the question, why were you calling each other if you were together? And so these phone records eventually led to officials looking in a particular area, and they found a burn pit, but they were unable. So they found that burn pit on June 21st, and they also found that box that we talked about. And they apparently could smell decomposition, but they couldn't find Vanessa Guillen. And then on June 30th, a contractor, someone who does not work for the military, was apparently working on a fence, and he found human remains. shortly that evening is when officials say that Aguilar confessed, told them what happened, and they were able to find her remains in the area. The details are just incredibly just brutal and graphic, and that's really what led to the finding of her body.
And the Army says that Robinson fled the base and shot and killed himself before they can make contact with him?
Yes, that's correct. They say that he'd been in the barracks, and for one reason or another, there aren't a lot of details, but that he apparently ended up fleeing the base, and officials, while they were searching for him, this part remains a little unclear. Some people say are reporting that it was a chase. Some people say that they approached him. I'm not really sure which one of those is correct, and the Army has not clarified to me. But yes, that he was able to kill himself before he was taken into custody.
What happens from here? Vanessa Guillen's family is calling for an investigation, and we're going to be talking about the legislation that is expected to be introduced on August 1st. What are you expecting to happen in the coming weeks and months?
Right. So advocates and her family are calling for a change in two things. One is they want to see a change in how the military treats people who experience sex crimes in the military. They want to see just the chain of command completely taken out of the equation. Because right now, each military branch sort of has one. I know in the Army, it's the SHARP program, the Sexual Harassment Assault Prevention Program. And then in the Air Force, I think it's called the SPARC program. So all the different branches have some way of reporting sex crimes. But in a lot of times, depending on what kind of report is filed, a direct commander will know what happened, will have access to what happened. And a lot of people think that sort of creates this culture of, you know, you report someone and all the information gets leaked to your colleagues, people you live with in the barracks, right? And so they just want to see the chain of command completely taken out of the equation. And then they also want to see a congressional investigation into what happened to Vanessa Guillen. There are members of Congress who are calling for an investigation, who would like to see an investigation about the way her disappearance was handled. And so in the coming weeks, we know that the family is going to meet with President Donald Trump at the end of July in Washington, and that's when the bill is going to be, the I Am Vanessa Guillen bill. It's going to be introduced by Congress, I believe, August 1st. But that really isn't, the ideas in that bill, those aren't actually new ideas. There are other bills or acts that have been proposed in the past trying to get this exact same thing passed, and a lot of people, especially, you know, advocates who've been working so hard to get these kinds of bills passed have told me that they feel if this had happened, that Vanessa Guillen would still be alive.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for your reporting, Jolene, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Jolene Almendarez is a freelance journalist in San Antonio, Texas, and she has been covering Vanessa Guillen's story over the last couple of weeks for Texas Public Radio. Now I would like to welcome Pam Campos Palma to the show. Pam served in the Air Force for over a decade. She now organizes around military and veterans issues, and she began her career in the immigrant rights movement. Hi, Pam. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Colonel Don Christensen. Don was Chief Prosecutor of the United States Air Force from 2010 to 2014. He served in the U.S. Air Force for 23 years. He is now President of Protect Our Defenders, a nonprofit human rights organization that supports military sexual trauma and survivors. Don says leaving the military was the best way to help survivors and make a difference. Hi, Don. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Don, you have a very interesting perspective on all of this because you were the chief prosecutor for the United States Air Force from 2010 to 2014. We have done so many shows about sexual assault in the military, and the main complaint is always the same. This system just doesn't work because it's not independent. Can you tell us what you saw when you were trying to help survivors get justice?
Yeah, what I saw was a process that too often brutalized survivors when they came forward, that rarely delivered justice. Unfortunately, when a woman or man comes forward with sex assault allegations in the military, they're about 12 times more likely to be retaliated against than they are to see their perpetrator held accountable. When it's all said and done, the military is only successful in holding about 2% of the offenders that are identified by a survivor accountable. And, you know, that's a failure rate that just does not give confidence to someone to come forward when they've been sexually assaulted or harassed.
Only 2%. Pam, part of the problem is that in the military, it's the commanders that are in control. It's not lawyers. There's a huge bureaucracy. Can you talk more about this system that's in place and why it doesn't work?
Sure. I mean, everything that Don just mentioned, but also there's this inherent conflict of interest. And as many countless survivors of military sexual crimes have said for decades, the military culture is so entangled in rape culture. Rape culture is part of training. It is part of so much of the institution that one of the biggest questions we have to ask ourselves is, we are asking survivors of this oppression to, how can you report something that is part of the culture, right? And so many survivors and targets of sexual violence and abuse in the military then are risking career suicide, are risking further abuse and re-traumatization. And so both commanders, the entire system, peers, and survivors are set up for failure when the military has known that this has been an issue beyond just, you know, a military justice system that is rigged against us. And so from top to bottom, that's why so many advocates, the thousands of women who have signed on and doubled down on the Guillen family's demands are saying, we cannot have any more Band-Aids. We can't have any more cosmetic solutions. We need actual overhaul of the system.
Pam, you served in the Air Force for over a decade. And as we said in our last segment, so many women and men are sharing stories, detailed stories of sexual assault and rape, and they're horrific. Why is rape so systemic in the U.S. military?
I mean, it's one of the most obvious and complicated questions, I think. Like I said, from the moment that individuals step foot on basic training to the time of our death, right, from the Department of Defense to the VA, this is culturally and institutionally just part of the military and part of our community. It goes even beyond and spills over. We call it cultural spillover into the VSOs. Fundamentally, I believe that it is so systemic because little to no interventions have been made to actually identify the purporters of rape culture, of rape, of sex crimes, right? It is a problem that we know the names of the Vanessa Guillens, of the Lavina Johnsons, of more individuals within the community than we do of actual perpetrators. And so the system inherently protects its own. It inherently protects commanders who don't do their jobs, rapists, and it makes survivors put in an impossible box. And so in a system like that, then rape is going to be the status quo. And it is almost expected. It is now an occupation. It's deemed an occupational hazard.
Pam Campos-Palma served in the Air Force for over a decade. She's now organizing around military and veterans issues. Colonel Don Christensen was chief prosecutor of the United States Air Force from 2010 to 2014. He served for 23 years and is now president of Protect Our Defenders, a nonprofit that supports military sexual trauma or survivors in the military. We're going to take a quick break. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. If you'd prefer to write rather than call, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. You may leave a comment or on the website at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Coming up on 1A, it's coronavirus 2.0, what we've known and what we're learning, coming up at 11 o'clock right after your call today.
Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll have a discussion about the state of journalism with native reporters. According to the American Society of News Editors, less than 0.05% of all journalists at leading newspapers and online publications are Native American. I hope you can join us tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are talking about the tragic murder of Vanessa Guillen, a 20-year-old soldier who disappeared from the Fort Hood military base in Texas on April 20th. Her remains were found 20 miles away in late June. The Army said the suspect who killed her, another soldier, died by suicide on July 1st. Her family says she was sexually harassed but didn't file a report for fear of retaliation. They are now calling for an investigation. And if you'd like to join today's conversation, we've been covering this issue for many years. There was an amazing documentary that came out in 2012 called The Invisible War. And so many people are saying not much. Well, a few things have changed since then, but not systemic change. So if you served in the military or you work on these issues, if you have a story to share, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Pam Campos Palma served in the Air Force for over a decade, and she now organizes around military and veterans issues. Colonel Don Christensen was a chief prosecutor of the U.S. Air Force from 2010 to 2014. He served for 23 years and is now president of Protect Our Defenders, a nonprofit that supports military sexual trauma and survivors. Don, in an interview with CBS, you were talking about just what the courtroom looks like, and you described how the survivor had no one sitting behind her except for maybe her family. And the victim had a huge array of people behind him. And we're talking about women and men right now, including his commander, people at the top. And you said that that was just, that really says a lot. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So one of the things we see when somebody does come forward and says, this is the person who offended me, that often the unit rallies around the offender. You know, the military has this team attitude, leave no one behind, and that spills over to those accused of crime. So when you do a trial, it was not unusual to have behind the accused, and his commander, his first sergeant, supervisors, lots of co-workers showing support for him, that testifying on his behalf. I'd seen cases where somebody had been convicted of sexually abusing their daughter and having the commander and the first sergeant testify that they want him to stay in their unit, convicted child molester. So there's a culture of disbelief within the military when someone steps forward and says, I've been harassed or sexually assaulted. That disbelief, it's victim blaming, the stereotypes that way too many people have about what a victim should look like. And the result of it is for a victim, they will often watch their commander supporting the person they said sexually assaulted him, and disincentivizes anybody to come forward.
In another interview, you said that survivors are very reluctant to report high-ranking officers. Victims would tell you that the worst part for them was how their units treated them.
Yeah, absolutely. So retaliation numbers are through the roof, over 60%. One in three women who report sexual assault are forced out of the military within a year of reporting, often with a lower characterization of their discharge. If it's, you know, if you're reporting somebody that's very senior, they're going to be connected within the military. They'll often have very high-ranking generals supporting them. And as a result, that case never goes forward. For a victim that's been sexually abused by a general officer or a colonel or somebody like that, their chances of success are almost zero. So if you look at the United States Air Force, it's been around for 72 years. In that time, they have never prosecuted a general officer for any crime. But at the same time, they have prosecuted 146,000 other airmen. And so there's almost a get-out-of-jail-free card if the abuser is a senior officer.
How do you explain this, Don? I mean, given that you served in the Air Force for 23 years, what are your conversations like with your former colleagues about these issues?
Well, contrary to what the generals and admirals would have Congress believe, that everyone in the military thinks that commanders are the solution to the problem, most people, when they're talking behind the scenes that are serving or have served, recognize the commanders are wholly ill-equipped to make these decisions and that there needs to be a change. But there is so much pressure, institutional pressure by leadership, to have a dogmatic view that commanders are the solution that no one is willing to speak out publicly. And so as a result, the generals and admirals can go before Congress and say, this is the solution, it has to be us, and there's no contrary in voices from the inside because they know that they're not allowed to do it. In fact, one young captain actually wrote a Facebook comment supporting Senator Gillibrand's reform military justice system, and she was reprimanded for engaging in political activity for doing so. So the military has made it very clear there's only one answer that you're allowed to give.
Mm. Pam, what would you add?
I mean, something that's significantly different. I've been asked a lot what's different with the Guillen case. There's so much animus and anger. And the additional layer to this is that, you know, black and brown indigenous women who serve and enlist at disproportionate rates, those communities enlist at disproportionate rates, are affected differently. And what's really different is that Vanessa Guillen's mother did not treat the military, the generals, with blind allegiance. There was not this romanticization of, you know, the military knows best, so honorable. She called it what it is. She has said that the entire chain of command that has failed her daughter should be relieved, should be fired. This is criminal. And so it's really interesting to me that there is such blind allegiance with Congress, which again, fundamentally Congress's main role is accountability, responsibility of our armed forces, our military, something that they have not done for decades. Because of this blind allegiance to not want to shake the trust of an institution of national security. But if our soldiers, if women, men, trans people in the military are in significant harm, which this is something that in the community is like the water that we swim in. It is just so germane and pervasive. It is, in fact, a national security issue. And yet year after year, Congress acts like this is some sidebar issue that we're so sorry about, that we need more trauma stories for. And a main change right now is that we are in a time of reckoning in our country where people are sick and tired of not being served. And so countless women across the country are demanding that Congress do their job, that there be an investigation, not in the way, and not allow the military to investigate itself, to give the same propaganda that is divorced from the reality, that the military's zero tolerance policies, purported policies, have not actually come to fruition. And lastly, I will say that there is also a divide in service. As a Latina, as a woman who has served my country, I am tired of the countless stories of predominantly women and people of color in the military who say that their service is stained and marred by being made to feel that they are not supposed to be in the institution. And so a culture of rampant racism and sexual violence and retaliation when you report it definitely is a deep structural failure that impacts our troops, impacts our national security, and the American people. The last thing I'll say is the American people have also fallen into this blind allegiance, either through ignorance of not understanding what the military is about, or following Congress's steps and just saying we're going to blindly believe these generals.
Right. We should also say in the videos that have appeared online of people bravely stepping forward to talk about their assault in horrific detail, they talk about the long-lasting trauma. In some cases, people turn to drugs and alcohol. People have severe depression. You know, some people that I've heard say they're never the same again. So this is long-lasting.
Of course. I mean, one thing that the other divide that I've noticed is the Guillen family and her mother has been very clear in Spanish language media. And one thing that has come up is that they are a mixed status family. In my organizing, I have seen countless Gold Star families of color, you know, immigrants who give the most precious thing you could give, right? Your child to serve your country. And then the bias, the structural failures of the military, the lack of accountability has those folks self-medicating, right? And then they are then criminalized. You know, DUIs are rampant. Drug charges are rampant. I've known Gold Star families who have had deportation come to their door. And so it's a horrific trickle effect that all stems from a corrupt system that is meant, like Don said, to protect offenders, to protect a failed system that keeps putting our own people in danger. And so one thing that is really interesting from the demands of grassroots women across the country is we're saying shut down Fort Hood. We're saying that we will not enlist. We are calling for a boycott of enlistments until there is justice and actual change, especially in an era where women, you know, are elevated as triumphant in the military, where Latino community is, you know, one of the most targeted recruited communities and also the highest growing population of enlistments. We are saying that the military, the Department of Defense, is not entitled to our children, our sons, and our daughters if they are not going to keep us safe.
Pam Campos-Palma served in the Air Force for over a decade. She organizes around military and veterans issues, and she began her career in the immigrant rights movement. Don Christensen was chief prosecutor of the U.S. Air Force from 2010 to 2014. He served for 23 years. He said leaving the military was the best way to help survivors. He now runs Protect Our Defenders, a human rights group that supports military sexual trauma and survivors in the military. Don, what was it that made you say, all right, it's time to leave and start my own organization?
Well, I had prosecuted a very senior fighter pilot in Aviano Air Base in Italy, and we were able to get him convicted of sexually assaulting a civilian woman. This was despite the fact that he had support of multiple generals, including four-star generals, trying to keep him from going to trial and trying to protect him after he went to trial. 4 months after the conviction, his general officer, who had the authority at that time, overturned the conviction because he was, quote, a good family man. After that, there was a media firestorm, but the Air Force's real only interest wasn't the victim, it was protecting the general who decided to throw out the conviction and protecting the system. That and other cases I had worked on and seen how the chain of command wasn't making sure justice was done, I just realized that I had to fight for systemic reform, and the only way I could do that was outside of the military. So I decided to retire. Protect Our Defenders had already been founded by that time. I wasn't the founder, but the founder was Nancy Parrish, who was from the Bay Area originally and And the Bay Area was really the key to getting the organization started through, like, Jackie Spear. But it was an opportunity to fight from the outside, because the military will crush anyone on the inside who is trying to advocate for reform.
So tell us about the work that you do with Protect Our Defenders and how it differs from when you were chief prosecutor of the U.S. Air Force.
Sure. When I was chief prosecutor, my job was to prosecute cases that I didn't select, going back again to the fact that commanders control this. So I had no say whether a case went to trial, but once a decision was made to go to trial, I and a team of 20 senior prosecutors would prosecute the most serious cases, and my job was to seek justice and get a conviction. Now, I have greater ability to advocate for reform. Protect Our Defenders has been instrumental in getting a series of reforms through the military justice process for the last 7 years that greatly enhanced the victims' rights and protections. We continue to fight very hard to have the commander removed from the prosecution function. It's not an anti-commander position. Commanders are great on a lot of things that they do, but they're simply unqualified to be making prosecution decisions for very serious criminal cases. Sex assault cases are particularly complex. The law is complex, and it's just factually and legally beyond the capability of a commander to be making a rational decision. And so Protect Our Defenders, you know, relies on the great support we've got in the Bay Area, including people like Carol Middleton, and that have really given us the ability to fight for victims and to get legislation changed and to continue to fight to get more legislation.
Well, we're getting a lot of emails thanking you both for your work, and some people are asking about supporting Protect Our Defenders. That website is protectourdefenders.com, and you can find more resources at yourcallradio.org. Don Christensen is president of Protect Our Defenders. They support military sexual trauma and survivors. He was chief prosecutor of the U.S. Air Force from 2010 to 2014. He served for 23 years. Pam Campos Palma served in the Air Force for over a decade, and she now organizes around these issues. If you have any questions or comments for Don or Pam, if you have a story to share, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's talk about the systemic change that is needed. We talked earlier, Pam, about Senator Kirsten Gillibrand introducing the Military Justice Improvement Act in 2013, which would have given independent military prosecutors outside the chain of command control over assault cases. A similar bill is expected to be introduced on August 1st, and Vanessa Guillen's family is going to travel to Washington, D.C. It sounds like it has the support of Donald Trump, because they're also going to meet with him. Can you talk about some of the systemic change that is needed?
Sure. I think what I'm really concerned about and what I think is really important is that nothing is pencil whipped that creates the illusion that there is now progress, while the devil in the details is not defined. The Military Justice Improvement Act has long been one of the greatest calls with cross-partisan support that gets lost in the defense budget process. This has constantly been treated as a piecemeal, sidestep issue, when it fundamentally, we should all ask the question, why has this not been given its own hearing, its own omnibus, more rigorous political will. It's telling that even the veterans in Congress are not, jumping to get justice for this family. And so in addition to the Military Justice Improvement Act, we must eliminate gray areas. Congress must amend Title 10 U.S. Code so that the Department of Defense and the, Institution of Veterans Affairs, Department of Veterans Affairs, are in line, right? It makes no sense for these institutions to not be in step. Hold offenders accountable. It's ex- extremely glaring to me that there's been little to no mention in any of this around what accountability looks like of the leadership on that base at Fort Hood. It is glaring that, you know, now we're getting wrapped in the details of her death and her devastating murder, but we should not forget that she was missing for months. And, you know, was it just chalked up as an AWOL? I mean, military bases are the most secure places on the planet, and they should not be allowed to operate under a level of secrecy. Veterans are tired of being exploited as props while remaining underserved. We are tired of the normalcy of expendability, and we are tired with the comfort of violence. The last thing I'll say is that it will be interesting to understand what exactly President Trump is willing to sign. It is confusing to understand that there's a bill that, you know, we haven't seen the details of that a president is already willing to sign. We should not forget that in 2013, the president tweeted, you know, what do people expect when they put men and women together in the military in terms of unreported sexual assault, implying that, you know, us serving together brings on makes sexual assault normal. And so this demands the diligence, the attention, and the political will of Congress members if we're going to really get real justice for Vanessa and the hundreds of thousands of women who are echoing her experience all over the internet.
Well, according to the family's lawyer, Natalie Kawan, this bill will require a third party to investigate sexual harassment complaints and allow members of the military to sue the government the same way civilians can. I mean, based on the interviews I've seen, she's the way she talks about it is, you know, we are going to get systemic change with this legislation.
Right.
Well,
yeah. And go ahead, John.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, Pam said, you know, this is piecemeal. So those are two important steps in it, but it's not going to be everything we need to do. There are a number of systemic problems in military justice. We start with the fact that it's not a professional system in the sense that lawyers don't make prosecution decisions, commanders do. But it goes beyond that. We have a huge problem with the way the military as an institution operates. People rotate in and out of positions very quickly. It's an up or out position, up or out industry. And so when it comes to criminal justice, that simply doesn't work. Experience. It matters in the ability to properly investigate. It matters in the ability to properly prosecute cases. But the military rotates their investigators out quickly, so the average investigator doesn't have that much experience. The same with prosecutors. They need to change the way they've done that. Congress has twice passed legislation requiring the military to establish career litigation tracks, but the military has slow rolled that, and they haven't done that. As a result, the prosecutor on a complex case maybe has 2, 3, 5 years of experience, where in the civilian world, and you'd be looking at a prosecutor, a special victim prosecutor, would have 10, 20 years of experience. And the same with our investigators. We just had a case where a very complex, very violent rape case where the lead investigator for the criminal investigation division had graduated 6 weeks earlier from their investigation school. And he's put in charge of this very serious rape allegation. And as a result of the mistakes that investigator made, the man was acquitted. And that is something that the military has to come to grips with, that they can't just keep rotating people in and out of these positions. And then our sentencing process in the military is archaic. It has absolutely no similarities to the civilian sentencing system. And as a result, our sexual assault sentences skew very light. There's no post-sentencing supervision like you have in the federal system, where for a period of maybe 20 or 30 years, the sex offender is going to be under a series of restrictions that simply doesn't occur in the military. When a military sex offender is released from jail, he has zero restrictions placed on him. There's absolutely no requirement that they get treatment and continue to get treatment. And so There's just a lot of issues that need to be done. I kind of concern, I share Pam's concern. We don't know what this legislation is, and we can't view it as going to be a fix for everything that's wrong with the military.
Don, based on your experience, let's say what you just described, all of those policies were implemented. If we started seeing prosecutions of accusers and, you know, people in the chain of command, how do you think that would affect systemic assault and rape in the military?
Well, I think accountability is one of the driving forces of driving down numbers. I mean, we've seen it with DUIs. Once we started holding people accountable for driving while drunk, we were able to drive down the numbers. I think it's the same with sex assault. Right now, the military, if you look at the big picture of over 20,000 sexual assaults in the military, and we see at the end of that 130 or so convictions a year, that means there's a 99% chance if you sexually assault somebody in the military, you'll never be held accountable. So there's no incentive to change your culture. There's no incentive to change your actions. So if we got to a point where we started to prosecute successfully and hold people accountable, I think it would help shift the culture of the military. And we're never going to eliminate sexual assault, but we want to get it to the lowest possible numbers we can.
Pam, final thoughts. We have about 30 seconds. How can people get involved around these issues and push for these changes?
Sure. I think first and foremost, all of us must rally and double down on the demands of the Guillen family. The last thing I'll add is, you know, what reparations are they owed? What specific benefits will the government pay them for their failure? Everyone can support by also signing our grassroots letter, by going to hashtag Justice for Vanessa Guillen. And you'll see the petition that is circling around of active duty and women veterans in support of the Guillen family's pursuit for justice.
Pam Campos Palma served in the Air Force for over a decade. She now organizes around military and veterans issues. Pam, thank you so much for your work, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Colonel Don Christensen was chief prosecutor of the U.S. Air Force from 2010 to 2014. He served for 23 years. He is now president of Protect Our Defenders, a human rights organization that supports sexual trauma survivors in the U.S. military. He says leaving the military was the best way to help survivors. Don, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for sharing, putting a light on this issue. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, and we will continue to do so. You can learn more about Vanessa Guillen's case, and you can also read stories of other brave people stepping forward to share their stories at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to David Latulipe and Kevin Vance for keeping our studio running. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.